On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't leave me in all this pain. Don't leave me out in the rain. Come back and bring back my smile. Take these tears away. I need your arms to hold me now. That's it.
Well, no, give me a little chorus.
Oh. Unbreak my heart. Say you love me again. Undo this hurt you caused when you walked out the door and walked out of my life. Uncry these tears. I said, cry so many, many nights. Unbreak my heart. My heart. There it is.
I could listen to that.
It's simple for me.
That is one of the great voices of our time. Today, Toni Braxton on Toure Show. Toure Show is all about giving you fuel to help you use your dreams like a rocket ship to zoom off to another life. It's about talking to amazing people about their core talents and exploring why they're successful. Toni Braxton is a modern music legend. She sold over 67 million records with a voice that's deep and sultry and husky and unforgettable. When she first came out, some people were confused.
L.A. told me, Elton John said, I love your new artist, Toni. His voice is great. It's androgynous. And L.A. said, I will tell her.
Because of that voice, when she was growing up, she was not considered the best singer in her family. But now, she's known as one of the great singers of her generation and someone whose music has really touched people. All sorts of people.
I remember Courtney Nevada's wife. Nirvana.
Oh,
she came up to me and said, your song Breathe Again got me through the loss of my husband because it was such a sadness and I identified and you just allowed me to cry with you when I was singing that song with you.
Courtney Love told
she
you that.
She came up to me at the AMAs and said that to me.
I've interviewed Toni before, but not for this long, and I really wanted to know all about her singing. How does she do it? She's got a new album out. It's called Sex and Cigarettes. It's her 8th studio album. Check it out. She sounds as good as ever. But first, we talk about her son, Diesel. Toni came to the studio.
I'm trying to think of the last time I saw you. I feel like it was in the island somewhere. Yes.
It was like Aruba or something.
Something. It was like one of those festivals.
And we talked about your son.
Yes, he's doing great. He's like off the spectrum.
He's off
the spectrum.
What do you mean off the spectrum? How do you get off the spectrum?
Because I think early diagnosis changes everything. He was 3 when we found out. He was mild to moderately.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought like if you have autism, like that's your life.
No, that's not true. There's other kids, they outgrow it.
So he's outgrown it?
He's off the spectrum. He's in regular. He's in private schools.
And you wouldn't know?
No, you wouldn't know if you saw him. You'd be like, no way. Because often people say, okay, which one is it?
Right. No.
That one, like Eddie Murphy said to me one day, which one you give him a Diesel? The one who just said a joke cracked on me? That one? Oh, nothing wrong with that boy. He cracked on Eddie Murphy.
How did you do it?
Early diagnosis. I mean, he was in crazy ABA, occupational, all the time. Like I had ABA 40 hours a week. I was
What's
crazy
ABA?
Applied behavior analysis.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's doing that all the time.
All the time. Occupational therapy, you know, the exterior things and everything you could think of. Every therapy that someone suggested to me, I did it. But I always also had the people from Autism Speaks.
Right.
Who, unfortunately, she passed.
Right.
But she gave me a lot of little pointers. Do this, do that. He's young. He's 3, Toni. By the time he's 12, you could have this reversed. She told me that, too.
So what is the thing that you did or that they did that most had an impact, a positive impact, like that most got you to this?
It was the ABA. applied behavior analysis is like a nanny that specializes in that deficit.
Wow.
And every day, I know that little kid, I probably drove him to drink. I didn't care. And I, to be honest, financially, a lot of people don't have the finances to enable them to have the therapies that I was able to acquire.
Sure.
That's a big, huge part of it.
Sure.
I think that's 80% of it.
Yeah.
Because if you have the resources to get the therapies for your kid, you know, it's like occupational therapy. If a person breaks their leg and immediately you go into therapy, it can help, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't have that, your leg may have a permanent curve in it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
That's amazing.
You very, very blessed.
You had turned your life, I don't want to say upside down, but you were like, I'm living in Minnesota, right?
When I first got married, I lived in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I remember you said you were making that choice because that was better for Diesel, for your son.
The whole thing, my husband was in, at the time, was in mint condition.
Right.
And we were newly married. His grandparents were there, and the whole thing worked out best for that situation.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a singer. I can live anywhere because I can travel. But mint condition, the whole group was there, and he was the only one that wasn't living there, so it was easiest on our family if we all were.
Now you're in L.A.
Yeah. I mean, I've been all over the place. I've been in L.A. I've lived in New York. I lived here. I lived in Atlanta. Now I'm back in L.A.
Right. So what do you – I want to focus on singing because you are one of the great singers of your era.
Thank you.
And I want to give folks just a roadmap, an idea of what that is about, what that takes, what it takes to get there, what it takes to stay there. I mean, just start with just – how you started in singing, because you started in the church, right?
Absolutely. I'm a PK.
So how did growing up in the church, singing in the church, being in the choir, how did that start you on this journey?
Well, the church is that place where you can sing even if you can't really sing.
Right.
You get encouragement from the congregation. You know, the congregation is your audience. The pulpit's your stage, got the microphone, no matter what, it lets you sing. And that's the first moment that you get encouraged.
But they... Yeah, but you were always good, right? Like, were you ever, I mean, you're like, they encourage you if you were bad, but you were never bad, were you?
Well, you know what? I was a kid singing, and I remember I used to get a lot of little solos. But when I got older and my voice started changing, because I've always been a contralto, I've always had this husky voice. I remember it wasn't in style for my type of singing, my voice, the deepness, the depth of my voice. So I became a background singer.
Okay.
Once I realized I could sing, and they realized I could sing, it's like, oh, she'll sing background. And then I played piano, so I couldn't play and sing at the same time. It was a little difficult when I first started.
When did you start to become a lead singer?
Eek, in college. Even the family group, the Braxtons, I was not the lead singer. Everybody had a song or two that they would lead, but my sister Trina was the lead singer. It wasn't me.
So it became you in college?
In college.
How? Why?
I'm 5 years older than my next sister, 10 years older than me and Tamar.
Right.
So it was a big difference. So I think when I went to college, I would sing in college programs and talent shows and anything. So any talent they had going on in the city, local talent, I would be the performer.
And I mean, you talk about the contralto, the depth of your voice. I mean, that has been the thing that separates you, that makes you so special. Part of the thing.
Yeah, I agree, you're right.
So when was it first noticed that, well, she's deep, but she could lead.
Oh, wow. It was actually the guy who wrote Girl You Know It's True by Milli Vanilli.
Okay.
Because I met him at a gas station. That's kind of how I got discovered. And he said, your voice is really unique. I've never heard anyone sing like you. And he hooked me up with people on Arista Records. And that's how I got noticed, I would say. But I did backgrounds at first, and I would do little demos for people. And I was happy to do demos. I didn't care.
And were you singing at the gas station or he just ran into you?
He worked at the gas station, which I didn't understand. That's why I didn't believe he was a real producer, because he worked there. He was like, back then it was full service.
He was pumping gas.
He was pumping my gas, and he came and said, are you a singer? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so not interested.
Right.
Thinking as a line. He said, no, seriously, I've seen you sing around the city. You're a singer, right? And I'm like, yeah. Then I got kind of arrogant, like, yes, I am. You know, confidence had to come out. You know, that's part of the thing of being a performer. You got to have confidence. So I was like, yes, I am.
Right.
I am. And he said, come to my house. I do demos. And then he lived with his mom. So I'm like, okay. I'm 30. You live with your mom. I was guessing he was 30.
Working at a gas station.
I think he worked at a gas station. But you know, he was a producer and writer and just starting in those days. So that's how I got started. They said my voice was really unique sounding.
It is very unique sounding. I mean, you are one of the deepest sounding of the superstar females, right? Of your
That's
era.
True.
Anyway, right?
That's
I mean,
true.
So who were you? Who is an influence? Who is an inspiration to you as a deeper sounding woman?
This is going to sound crazy. Everyone knows it's Anita Baker, but it was also Michael McDonald.
Okay. Tell me about Anita Baker and tell me about Michael McDonald.
I know, very eclectic group. Anita Baker, she's a contralto like myself.
She's deeper than you, right?
I'm probably a little deeper than her.
Really? Okay.
A little deeper, but we're both contraltos. But she could probably reach the same notes that I can, probably.
Okay.
And she was the only person who was out at the time to sound like me. You had Whitney, whom I love, all these soprano singers, that Mariah, but Anita Baker had that. You bring me joy when... It was very low and husky.
Yeah.
She sounded like me, so I gravitated to her immediately.
And Michael McDonald?
Well, Michael McDonald, because you can't understand anything he says like myself. But his voice sounds like it's in a compressor.
What was his big hit?
Keep forgetting, baby. Your song, keep forgetting, not in love anymore. That song.
Yes.
Warren G.
Yes.
But
yes.
Our generation, yeah.
Yes. I was thinking about it on a previous sale, an earlier thing, Warren
yes.
G. Sale, but yes.
Warren G.
Yes. So, wait, was Luther at all?
Luther was in there, but he was a tenor. But I could sing him, anything he sung, but he had a little bit of height on me, a little bit of that upper range.
Can you sing soprano?
On Break My Heart, that one note is soprano. Probably
okay.
Second, but... The tone of my voice makes you think it's a tenor.
So you could do that, but contralto is what you are naturally.
Contralto gives you a range. You're comfortable here. This is where you're home. But you can go up and you can go down. But here's where you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I can do some things that's high. Especially in my Foss, I could do anything.
In your what?
Foss. My falsetto.
So, I mean, was there an effort to learn how to control your voice, like to find that home and to find it in a deeper place than other women who you're listening to were finding theirs?
It was always there, but Ellie and Babyface helped me control it to the upper range.
Okay.
They helped
what does
me
that
do
mean?
That. Like if I was singing songs, they would make the key almost too high to push me to get comfortable with the higher range.
Uh-huh. So what did that do?
It's almost like exercising a muscle, and you take it and you overexpand it so it gets comfortable being used to that capacity. So they would have me sing songs higher than you would expect for me to sing, which were a little uncomfortable at first. And then I got comfortable with singing a little higher than I felt comfortable. They took me out of my comfort zone.
So then that made it easier to be...
Made it easier for me to... My songs are a lot higher than people think, though. But you hear the tone and the texture and you think they're lower, but they're not. They're not low.
They're not.
Not really, no.
So at your level,
yeah.
What does a singer do just to prepare? What does practice look like?
You know, I really don't warm up before a show. When I did Broadway, I did, because that was a different type of singing. So if I'm singing Belle, I can't sing in this husky Tony voice. So I had to get comfortable with singing, "There goes the baker with his tray like always, the same old bread and roses sell." I had to get comfortable singing in a Disney voice. So I had to warm up for that.
Yeah,
I had to.
But so for the stage, for a concert,
no,
you don't warm
never,
up?
Ever. But that comes from church. We're going to have an A and B selection by Tony. You don't get a chance to warm up. You just have to sing.
You just go out and just
I just sing.
Just,
yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you not talk before you go out?
If I'm getting hoarse, I don't speak before shows.
But most of the time, that's not a problem.
But most of the time, no, not really.
Do you warm up before the studio?
Nope. I just go in singing.
Is there a time when you're doing scales or practicing in some way?
Nope. I don't know what that is.
So really. I mean, everybody has that 10,000 hours, right, that they spend like practicing before they get to be a master.
I probably had 30,000.
So where did you spend that? Like, what were you doing? Was that all in church?
Most of it was in church, and we practiced a lot, like the Jacksons practice. You see the movie? The Jacksons,
yeah, of course.
Epic. We were like that, like while our friends were out at the park or playing, we were home rehearsing all the time, hours a day.
From a young age?
From a young age.
How old?
Hours. Gosh, maybe to that degree by the time I was 10.
So from 10?
From 10 on. I spent more than 10,000 hours, absolutely.
At home, just singing with your sisters?
All the time. And they were young. They were babies. So if I was 10, Tamar was a newborn. But we had a group before Tamar was born, even.
Was this directed by you or
your
mom?
My mom's a singer. She sung opera, so she helped foster us in the singing world.
So was she constantly saying, all right, girls, come on, let's
no,
sing
No doubt.
Some.
If we sing the wrong note, we would get punished. No, I'm not joking. Just like we
punished
called,
in what way?
Like really punished. Couldn't watch television. You can't go outside. My mom, her last name's Jackson, uh-huh. her maiden name, and she is Joe Jackson's first cousin because my mom is no joke.
Well, did you get hit?
We would get spanking sometimes if we sung the wrong note.
You got spankings for singing
Absolutely.
The wrong note?
Absolutely. Just like the Jacksons. There's no mystery that my family and I can sing.
Wait,
no
tell me about a time when you sung the wrong note and you got hit.
Got a few of them. let's say we were singing, let's say harmonizing, and my mom told us to practice the day before. So we'd be ready to sing the next day. And say she saw me on the phone. And I wasn't practicing, so I sung my note, and I sung it wrong. I was like, I told you, and she might get a smack on my arm or whatever. You weren't practicing. You were on the phone. No phone for you for the next month. It was like long punishments.
For singing the wrong note.
Long punishments, just like athletes where they were playing sports, and their parents were like, you know, managing them, or I should say their trainer. It's the same exact thing.
Well, it sounds like James Brown, right? Finding people for missing a note or being late coming in. Or
yeah.
Did that intensity make you better or did it make you retreat?
It makes you better because you don't want to get in trouble. And then you want to please your parents too at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you're a teenager and you're doing all this with your mom and your sisters, were you considered the best of the group?
No.
No. Who was thought of?
My sister Trina. She led most of the songs. My voice was so husky and so thick. And gospel back in that time was not mainstream. I mean, we didn't have Creed. like these great gospel song groups. But we had Tremaine Hawkins going up yonder. I don't know if you know this. And we had hymns that people would remake. But like at my when I graduated from high school, I had a pool party. Okay. And we played gospel music at my pool party.
Okay.
It was like that. But everyone knew that like, Tony's the religious people. They're the religious people. Did you go to school with people that were like that? The religious people that you knew?
No. I mean, no.
You didn't? You missed that era?
I don't recall having friends.
Well, people you knew at school, whether say they weren't your friends, but somebody, the religious people at your school, the religious girl, the religious guy that was at your school. Not really? What kind of school did you go to?
I went to private school.
I got it.
I don't remember that specifically of somebody who's like they just go to church. That's all they do. I mean, I know that that exists. I didn't have anybody like that in my life.
Well, in high school, public school, we were those people, the weird. They called us the weird religious people.
The weird?
Well, because I didn't wear pants. I was 15. Well, 14.
What was
15.
The denomination?
Well, when we started off, we were apostolic and then became holiness. And then by the time my dad became a minister, we were United Methodist. But my parents were still into the doctrine of how they were, what they raise us in. They were still, we didn't celebrate Christmas. That was a sin. Holidays.
To celebrate Christmas?
None of that. It was paganism.
Were the services very loud and upbeat?
Quite.
Like Holy Roller?
Yeah, we were that. Before my dad became United Methodist, and then that changed. But my parents, we still didn't put up trees for years.
God, I remember the first time somebody took me to one of those churches. Because we didn't go to church that much.
Okay.
But my mom made sure we did the Episcopal church up the street.
Okay, that's okay. That was
just
good.
Just enough to get a basic religious education.
That's important.
And I was confirmed, so I had to know some basic things.
Yes.
I remember having some questions because my journey to faith was not really there.
I understand.
And so I was like, well, you're basically, I didn't exactly use that, but it's basically like, sir, you're basically presenting Jesus as a magical figure.
Yeah.
And I'm way into and continue to be into the idea of Jesus as a real person, as historical Jesus. But I'm like, this Jesus is, and I'm like 11, 12, like,
your
Jesus
kid,
as
absolutely.
A magical person. Like, what are you talking? How could he have done that? Like, what are you? And he's, you know, the answer is faith. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, I'm 12. I know better than. But then when, so that was a very white church. The services were very boring. But when they, took me to a holiness church in the hood, and they were having a party.
Yeah, the ball.
And it was a ball. I was scared by like the intensity of
my
the moment.
My cousins were too, when they would visit us.
But it's exciting.
It's exciting. That's all we know is celebration through singing.
In a lot of ways, that holiness experience is really a core experience that creates black music.
That's right? All we had.
I mean, like, I think about the way that, you know, that Chuck Berry was, you know, I mean, like, that's what he was distilling for this audience. Right?
But most people are surprised. They go, I'm too young to have been in that period. If you think about it, none of my colleagues, Whitney came from the church.
Right.
Not as strict as I was, but right. She sang in the church. But they often go, wow, you're so young to have experienced that type of religion.
Yeah, but that church experience is really important for forging singers.
I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many black singers who come out of the church beyond the basic education that you talked about and beyond having an audience that will listen to you no matter what every Sunday. What are all of you guys who come out of a church experience and become major legends in black music? What is the commonality? What is the church giving you that is making this happen so many times?
I think music for you, it has to be organic. You have to feel it. Mm. It can't be something that is manufactured because it is show. It shows.
What's the difference between a good singer and a great singer?
Oh, well, it's a big difference. Great singers, how do I explain this without insulting people? Because I think there are some people who cannot sing. Per se, but they're stars. Clearly, that is a star. She sure. can't sing for pickles, but she is a star. I mean, you've seen that before, right?
So you mean
that
like Britney
exists.
Spears? You don't have to say anything.
I'm not saying
you don't
a name.
Have to say any names.
Saying,
I said
Britney
the name.
Has a very a tone. Her tone is great.
I said
her
the
tone
name.
Is great.
I said the name Madonna. You did not say Madonna.
I like Madonna's
I love
voice.
Madonna.
Well, no, I like her voice.
But she's not a good singer, and you don't have to agree.
She's not a songstress.
Oh, definitely.
She's not a songstress, but she can sing.
Okay.
I really think she can sing. She's not a song. It's a difference between, that's why I'm trying to differentiate it for you. There are some people, you just love their tone of their voice and you love their songs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's some people who sing and they, it's magnetic. It just brings you in. Like when Whitney's singing those power notes, like, oh my God, give you chills, give you vibrations in
yes.
your body.
Yes.
That's what great singers give
but
you.
They make you feel rather than... Because partly what you described was bad singers, bad professional singers.
I like
singers.
To say bad singers.
But putting aside the Britneys, the bad professional singers.
Oh, my God,
singers,
I'm not going to say Britney. I like Britney.
I said that.
She's a star.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely a
oh,
star.
Oh, definitely a star. I mean, you know, without MTV, I don't know if she would have a career. But that's just me talking. That's not you.
I think people always, she's an artist that has that it factor.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But if we were, you know, if we were blindfolded.
But she knows she's not a songstress. She never declared herself as a songstress.
That is true.
Yeah.
So the great singers will make you feel.
The vibrations when they sing come to you.
I mean, for me, the greatest singer of all time is Nina Simone.
I kind of, whoa. I'm, yes.
I mean, the feelings go deep when she's talking. I mean, it was, you know. Whatever she's talking about, mm-hmm. you know, Mississippi Goddamn, what I'm like, I'm feeling you deeply.
I agree.
She's
one of my favorites.
Who's the greatest
Ella
singer?
Ella Fitzgerald to me.
Ella
Fitzgerald is the greatest singer to me.
Why?
What she was able to do with the barriers of segregation and her voice suspended and sustained by itself.
Yeah.
You didn't care what color she was. They just had to bow down. They had to give it up.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Frank Sinatra, I don't care who she is, what color she is. She has to sing with me.
Yeah.
Because her voice is radiant like that.
I mean, when we talk about feeling, and we go back that far, I thought you'd go back to Billie Holiday. Right?
I love Billie Holiday.
She, like, cuts through you like a
she
knife.
She does. But Ella does it for me differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's my grandma age, but... I just love it. She was the first female to win a Grammy.
We in here talking about Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald. We're not giving away our age with that.
Okay, got it. Good answer. I'm cool with my age. I'm really cool with it.
Well, you're 25, right? Because you Could look 25.
Parts of me are, yes, absolutely. I am 25 years old. Yes, I am.
But no, as long as I've known you, you appear to not have aged at all.
What a beautiful lie. I'm going to take that with me all week.
What are the advantages that you have from having that contralto, from being deeper than all the other women who you might be compared to?
I think my voice narrates sad love songs best.
Because you have a darker, heavier tone.
It's like a milkshake.
than a brighter tone?
Yeah, it's not. I can put brightness on it. I can put a little treble on it, but pretty much it's a bass. But it has a huskiness that makes you think, or I should say, can feel sad. I can feel sadness with you when you listen to it, because the lyrics, if I'm singing another sad love song, or Breathe Again, which is a really sad love song, I don't think people understand it because they can't understand my lyrics anyway. But let me think. If I Never Feel You in My Arms Again, you know the song? Mm-hmm. If I Never Feel You in My Arms Again.
I was alive in the 90s.
Okay, got it. So it's a sad, suicidal love song. So when people hear it, they go, oh, my God, that song took me away. I remember Courtney, Nevada's wife. Nirvana.
Oh, Courtney.
She came up to me and said, your song, Breathe Again, got me through the loss of my husband, because it was such a sadness, and I identified that you just allowed me to cry with you when I was singing that song with you.
Courtney Love told
you
that.
She came up to me. She came up to me at the AMAs and said that to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
The most difficult interview I've ever had. Courtney Love.
How was that?
Oh, my God.
She's honest. Always honest.
She's honest.
I love that.
She's honest. She was raking me over the coals that day.
I'm sure.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective, and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths, because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts. Back in 2018, Trump's Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries, while keeping the kids in the United States, separating and destroying hundreds of families. It was heartbreaking. And years later, hundreds of families still have not been reunified. I recently learned about an organization that's trying to make a difference. It's El Atrolado, and it works to reunify families, providing holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in America and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once they're reunited, they help each family find legal representation, housing, counseling, whatever they need to get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms just because you went to another country seeking a better life, and you never know when or if you'll ever see them again, and not ever seeing them again. We can't let family separations go on. It's inhumane. And if you're like me, and you believe that families belong together and immigration should not separate them, then join me in supporting El Atrolado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to El Atrolado in the description of this episode, or go to gun.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved: fill out an application at their website, elatrolado.org, volunteer. El Atrolado, ELOTROLADO.org/volunteer.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First. Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
So last year I took my family on a vacation to Costa Rica, and you just feel like the best dad possible. You can just take everybody to the sun and the beach and the fun and the new food, and my daughter and I jumping around in the ocean, and my son and I on the ATV rumbling down the dirt roads and having chicken in some little shack two towns over, and the chicken was amazing. And we just had a whole different interaction because we were together away from home, and it was fantastic. My wife got to do yoga. You just feel like a new person when you have a great trip, because great trips are a critical part of a great life, right? So how do you get there? Don't visit a ton of different sites. Go to tripping.com. One search lets you compare every home from the world's top vacation rental sites in one place to find the best deal on your perfect vacation rental. Because when we were in Costa Rica, we weren't in a hotel. We were in a house. And it was just nice to cook for yourself and just have the relaxed vibe of a home rather than some stale hotel. Vacation rentals offer more. More privacy, more space, more choices. Maybe fully stocked kitchens, extra bedrooms, sometimes they have hot tubs, all the comforts of home and then some. And best of all, at tripping.com, you join the millions of travelers who find more savings with rates up to 80% less than traditional hotel rooms. So if you want a spring break with your family in Costa Rica, tripping.com. Want to purify yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka? Tripping.com. Dreaming of a lovely vacation to Montego Bay or Negril or anywhere? Tripping.com. This year, save time and money when you book the vacation home of your dreams with tripping.com/Torre. That's tripping.com/Torre. Toure. Find your perfect vacation rental at tripping.com/Torre.
Let's talk about Breathe Again, because I think that is my favorite of your songs. And it's your favorite of
it's
your
my favorite
songs?
Song to
really?
It's my favorite to perform. Yeah.
I mean, it's deep, it's heavy, and I think the moment that, like, the chorus is not the big moment for me. It's the moment after the chorus, and I can't stop thinking about. But just that is the hook that crushes me, and the way you do that line.
Thank you.
Where were you when you made that record?
I was in Atlanta at Doppler Studio. I sung it three times. The first time Daryl Simmons produced it. The second was Babyface, and the last time was L.A. Because Daryl had me sing it a little differently because the song was for TLC.
Right.
At first it was, and I can't stop thinking about the way then just the babe for Tion. That's how it was at first. So Daryl had me sing it like that at first.
Uh-huh.
And then Babyface said, let me have her sing it again. So he had me sing it differently. And then by the time it got to LA, he said, I need her to sing it how she would sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And once I sung it my way, he was like, that's what I'm talking about.
When you say three times, like you sang it straight through?
One day I did it with Daryl. A week later I did it with Babyface.
Straight
maybe.
Through.
Yeah, I sing maybe four or five takes and I'm done on a song, some songs. And then maybe a month later, I did it with L.A. because he heard it and said, we can make it better. I want her to sing it her way. Just sing it and we'll see what happens.
Uh-huh.
So I had a lot of creative freedom as a new artist.
So what we heard is that third take with L.A.
The third take with L.A.
And getting to that money line, and I can't stop thinking about, like, how did you get the tone and everything right? You're kind of in the back of your mouth.
It sounds
there,
like,
right?
I'm in the back of my throat, but it's just the way my voice sounds.
Mm.
It was just, I heard the song. I thought it was a beautiful song. I begged for it. They said, well, it's not your song. Like, please give me that song. So I was in love with the song when I first heard it in demo form because I had an idea how I was going to perform it.
Mm, mm. So you're coming from where? Deep in your chest when you sing?
When I sing from here. I don't sing from here.
from the chest.
But sometimes it sounds like I'm from here. Maybe because there's so many marbles in my mouth. Like, I remember Ellie and Kenny would say, okay, the first song I ever sung, Give You My Heart with Babyface. Remember that song from the Boomerang soundtrack? So I was singing it. And I'll give you my heart. No, Babyface. Okay, give us a second. Give us a second. So I'm watching through the big mirror, big glass, and I'm going back and forth converting. And then it's, okay, Tony, we need you to sing that again, but we can't understand what you're singing. What are you saying? Okay, can you give us some conjunctions and or give us something so we can understand it? But be you. Of course, that put pressure on me. So I've managed to get a few conjunctions so you could understand some of the lyrics in between. But they kind of helped me get my sound, because then after that, I started to pronunciate every word. So I enunciate every word. They said, no, don't do that. Still be you. Just give us a few things in there, a noun or two. And that's how I kind of got my
sound. Be you, but be different.
Be you, but be somebody else. Kind of, yes.
But the lack of enunciation, isn't that part of black music, the messiness of the sound?
The messiness is kind of there a little bit, but I think lyrics are important. And people like myself, Michael McDowell, even Anita Baker, because people thought she was saying apple pie. Apple pie, bum bum. She was not saying that. But people said that's what she was saying. But I understand them, because they sing like myself. I get it. Rihanna, you can understand every lyric she says. You know, she's one of my favorite of the
girls. What'd she sound like?
I love her voice. Her tone is bananas. That's why she's a star. That tone will kill you. She's a hooker. She's a hooker.
What do you mean by it?
It's the tone. It's something about
it. You mean that she gives you hooks?
It's the sound. Well, she gives you incredible hooks. That's why I say she's a hooker. Because she has all her songs are great hooks. But it's because of the tone of her voice.
Like what? What does it sound like?
She has enough treble. That top is perfect. She has perfect top.
Uh-huh. What does that mean?
How can I describe it? Do you play an instrument of any type?
I don't.
Okay.
My mother wanted me to play the piano, and she's listening to this, and she'd be like, see?
Mom, get on her, Mom. Get on her, Mom.
I told you, this is why you should have learned to play the piano.
Okay, I'll give you an analogy. Like a piano. You ever hear a piano, and some pianos aren't tuned?
Yeah.
And some are perfectly tuned. So you hear that, and it's that note, that C, middle C note, sustains perfectly like a Steinway Conservatory. That's how her voice sounds to me. The tone, and it's almost perfect. The tone is just the right amount. When you listen to music in your car and you have everything adjusted, you can level her straight through, and it's perfect.
What about Beyonce?
Beyonce, I love her voice. Yeah. I can tell she's from church, so her style of singing. Mm-hmm. Straight from church.
Where do you
hear
it?
The vibrato, the tone of the vibrato. Ladies, ballas, ballas. That's that church thingy. She was obviously the lead singer of her church. No doubt. But it's that vibrato. I can tell by her vibrato. From the church.
Who else do you love out of today?
There's so many. All the kids are so talented. I mean, I just hear it. Let's see. Who do I love besides Rihanna? Give me something, because I forget. I'm a Drakey. So you talk about Drake. I'm a Drake. Everything about Drake, I know. I'm a Drakey.
You love Drake
all day long.
Really?
His new song, I love God's Plan, but it sounds like, I don't usually do this unless I'm drunk or I'm high. It sounds like that a little bit. So I'm like, no, not the same. But I still love him. it starts, I don't usually, the same lyric. I don't usually.
Uh-huh.
But I'm still a Drakey.
That video is undeniable for God's Plan. And I'm kind of like, how come nobody has thought of that already? All the multimillionaire rappers and whatever. I mean, like, just give to the community, like, in the video. And it seems so honest and real and...
Yeah, I agree.
That's who he is.
Anything Drake sings works for me. I mean, he's too young for me. I don't look at him that way.
Of course.
I mean, even though he's legal, but I'm just a real big giant fan.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
He's got an interesting voice and the way he approaches. I find myself wondering, why that guy? Like, why is he so beloved to you, to so many fans? I don't think anybody gets more radio play than Drake.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, why?
The tone of his voice. It's the right amount of depth to it. Mm-hmm. And he can sing. My kids go, oh, Drake's a singer. I'm like, who's a singer? Like, no, my Drake's a singer. Okay, let me listen. Then I had to really listen. Like, okay, maybe he is a singer.
Uh-huh.
He's not a song. Well, he's not. Would never be a songstress. But he's not a Luther. No. But now rappers sing their melodies now.
Mm. Did you see A Wrinkle in Time?
Huh?
Did you see A Wrinkle in Time? The Ava DuVernay movie, Oprah movie.
No, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it. The Disney movie.
I feel like, and those who have seen it Well, no. When you see it, you'll know.
Okay.
At a certain, I don't want to spoil, but at a certain point in the movie, they go into the Hotline Bling video.
Of course they
do. The set for the Hotline Bling. I'm like, they're in the Hotline Bling video. Like, the great big moment happens in
That's
the set.
Right.
I'm like, okay, all right. Like,
you know,
Jodie Foster found her father in outer space on the beach.
And they sung
she's
Hotline,
like, in the Hotline Bling video.
Okay.
And when you see it, you'll be like.
Did you see Jimmy Fallon sing that?
No.
He did. Bob Dylan does Drake Hotline Bling.
Okay.
I know in a Hotline Bling. He was Bob Dylan. That can only mean one thing. Did you see that? I promise it's the most brilliant thing I've ever seen before. It was Bob Dylan. He was doing an impression of Bob Dylan doing Drake.
So Drake's your number one rapper.
Drake is my number one rapper. Oh,
that's so sweet.
I like Kendrick Lamar too. I really like hip hop music.
Yeah.
I'm 90s. So hip hop music is important. We had, you know, Summertime with Will Smith, who was the first rapper to win a Grammy.
Right. Yes.
Right, you know,
I remember.
So yeah. I love hip hop music.
Yeah.
Craig Mack just passed. I was just listening to his song the other day. You know, I love hip hop music.
I never knew that it was Uniblab. I mean, I've heard that record a million times. I never knew the first word. Just like Uniblab, I never.
Okay. Got it. That's what Uniblab got.
Like
it.
Uniblab.
Yes.
Like, what? I don't know what he's saying.
I love
Apple Pie.
Apple whatever. Pie, everything. I just like hip hop music.
Unbreak My Heart.
Yeah.
Are ballads harder?
Easier.
They're easier.
They're easier for me to sing.
I usually hear singers say, you know, ballads are where we separate, you know, the women from the girls and the men from the boys.
Not for me. That's
why is it easier?
First for me. It just comes for me easier. I'm not sure why.
Are you inhabiting a character or are you just singing the notes?
I'm just narrating the lyrics through music. So I try to put the emotion in it.
Do you feel the sadness that the song is conveying or you don't have to?
I do. I read it first. Okay, let me hear the melody. Okay, let me sing it real quick.
So tell me about the day you did Unbreak My Heart.
I was in David Foster's home studio in California.
One of the great producers of our time.
And to be honest, he said, let's sing it real quick before Diane comes.
Diane Warren?
Yes. We love Diane.
Perhaps the greatest songwriter.
Yes.
Perhaps the greatest songwriter of the modern era.
Yes. She said, let's sing it real quick before Diane comes because she's like me. She will critique it to death.
Mm.
David, I don't want that production. Pull the strings back. Do this. It was like a little jokey thing. We have nothing malicious. And so I said, okay, let's do it. They could do this in 2 hours because I got a dinner engagement with Mr. Childs. Yep, let's do it.
So we did it. Let's knock this out.
We got to an hour and a half and Diane came in. She changed a few things, but it made it better.
Right.
And that was it. We actually finished like hour 35, 40 minutes. We were finished.
It took you about 90 minutes.
Doesn't take me long to sing. How long does it take to sing a song? Background vocals is what makes a song complicated because you have to layer it and layer it. But not lead vocals. That's simple. That's easy.
The lead vocal, you just go in there.
Effortless.
And you sing it straight through?
I do. I like to do sing it 4 or 5 times, and then I'll pick up what you need me to pick up.
And do you do a verse, and then the second verse, and then the third verse?
It depends on the producer. I like to sing them straight through. Some things are too complicated to do straight through because they overlap.
As if you were on stage.
Yeah, I like to sing it that way. That's
straight
like
first chorus, verse.
Straight through.
Really?
Unless they overlap, then I have to stop and piece it.
Sure. I mean, the chorus requires so much more energy. I would think that you would want to take a breath to, like, get ready for the big.
Nope. There may have been a few times that David said, okay, give me just the hook. Give me 3 passes of the hook so I can have something to comp.
Mm.
But that's about it.
Mm. That song is.
It's like Whitney. She did I'm Every Woman, and they said, what, in 40 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
The background vocals took 2 days, but she sung the lead in like 40 minutes.
And I guess there's no need to keep worrying it and doing it over and over. I did it.
You don't have to do that.
So when the songwriter shows up,
mm-hmm.
like Diane Warren, like what is she doing in terms of tweak? Because she's already written the song.
Yeah.
But are you saying like writing the song
the
is
production.
An ongoing process?
She wants the production to be a particular way. So she wrote the song and David did the production. He put all the music, the strings, the keyboards, all that stuff he did.
Yeah.
So she may have said, give me a little bit more swell on this particular instrument or things like that. You understand what I mean? Or Tony, I imagine Tony would give me this note a little stronger. So she's definitely has a voice in the song she writes.
I think a lot of people would agree that Diane Warren is the greatest songwriter of the modern era.
I'm partial to her, so I think she's great.
What makes her...
And Babyface, too, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what makes, let's talk about Diane and then Babyface. Yeah. What makes Diane the greatest songwriter of the modern era?
Because she just comes up with these melodies. And I think the lyrics alone sell the songs, but then the melodies is what kills it. Mm-hmm. I mean, who comes up with the lyric, "Unbreak my heart"? They usually say, "You broke my heart." But she's asking that person to unbreak it. Mm-hmm. That's genius to me. Mm-hmm. And then the way the melody comes together is just, "Unbreak my heart." Like, it's a vulnerability, just how you, that melody goes together that way.
And me. Babyface has been one of your collaborators from the beginning. Yeah. He's big part
people
of this
forget all the
well.
Songs Babyface has written. I mean, he wrote Eric Clapton, "Baby, if I could change," Madonna, "Take a Bow." I mean, he has a slew of so many artists he's worked with. You'd be surprised.
I mean, without a doubt, one of the greatest songwriters and producers and singers of the modern
era.
Everything.
He's everything.
So what has he taught you about singing and music that has helped you?
He told me I always trust my first instinct because it's usually the right one. My approach
first
to a song.
Take.
Yeah. Always listen to it. But he often tells me that I overproduce myself. I'm so critical of myself. Like, I can't go back and listen to the songs. Once I've mastered it, I will not listen to it anymore. Even on the radio, I'll turn it.
If Toni Braxton comes on the radio.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to turn it.
What? Because you're sick of it?
No, because I'm going to critique it. I'm going to say, "Oh my God, I should have sustained my vibrato right here. I should have done that. Ah, that was too long. That was a little flarp." That's like sharp and flat at the same time.
Wait, flarp?
Flarp.
What is that?
I'm sharp and flat at the same time.
What does that mean? Like, how does that sound?
Sharp is when you're on top.
Right.
Flat is when you're on the bottom. So sometimes it's flarp. It's like, I'm kind of off right there.
What does that sound like?
I say, give me a song. Any song.
Unbreak My Heart.
Unbreak my heart. I need to go up. I'm flarp. I'm in between both.
Okay.
Did you hear the note when I sung it wrong on purpose?
At the end, yeah.
Yeah, but I can't, like, unbreak my heart. That's not the note. It's unbreak my heart. I want to be on top of it. I want to be accurate.
Do you have perfect pitch?
I can sometimes, but I'll be off and flarp sometimes like everybody else. Definitely.
Love Should Have Brought You Home is another.
It was not for me. It was for Anita Baker.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, right. I mean, a lot of people don't realize this. A songwriter puts something out. Somebody gets attached to it.
Yeah.
But they may or may not love it. It may or may not come out.
She didn't feel that one. Perfect for me. Mm-hmm. Worked for me. But she was pregnant, to be fair. She was pregnant at the time when the Boomerang soundtrack, because it was supposed to be her soundtrack.
Right.
All the songs.
Right.
Yeah.
So you got to step in.
I got to step in and do my thing.
So tell me about making that one.
It was just a demo, and they actually used the exact demo on the record. I never resung it. I did it as a demo for Anita, then they just kept it.
It is amazing to me that you're so often able to just, without warm-up, just walk in, crush the song. It becomes iconic.
Yeah, this is singing to me.
I mean, it's like an athlete. Like, yeah, I don't need to stretch. Like, I'm good. Like, I'll run, you know, super fast, like faster than everyone else in the
NFL.
But
they should warm up because they have a muscle. But, you know, there have been moments where I have tried to warm up. I'm going to be honest. But it didn't work for me. It just didn't work.
So tell me about a moment in your singing when it was hard. Like, it was hard to get that note.
Whoa.
Or does it all come easily to you?
No, Unbreak My Heart is a hard, difficult song to sing. That last note is hard.
Which part?
Without you, I just can't go on. Because it's high.
Okay.
And strong. I'm holding that a good 7 seconds. That's a long time.
So that's tricky. That requires a certain physical strength.
You got to breathe properly to make it happen.
Is there circular breathing while you're singing?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're breathing through your nose while you're singing
through your
mouth. It
depends. Sometimes I may breathe through my mouth and my nose. Depends on the song.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think folks realize, just straight singing, you would get tired out if you don't know how to breathe while you're...
Yeah, you have to. Like, Adele had... Oh, my gosh. She can sustain a note. I've never seen that before in the vocalist. She sings one breath.
She's pretty amazing.
No, one breath. How can I explain that to you? What's her last song she had out? What was it? Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, that was Sam. Wasn't that Sam Smith?
No.
Oh, no. Oh, No shots. I know Adele. I love Adele.
No, that was not Sam. Sam sings "Where Is It Good and Goodbye." She sings "Hello." Okay, but that's okay. I like Sam too. Adele and Sam. I've never had that confused.
Oh, no.
But Adele is a girl. When you think of Adele, like people often, L.A. said to me that they had this big meeting and they said Adele was the Tony of the 90s. Because she's a young girl who sings these AC songs. You know, think about it, the adult contemporary music, her songs. She didn't have any dance songs. She didn't have it. And when I came out, I had all these AC songs. So he had some big convention and they said someone mentioned that. But because she's like 25?
Something like that.
She was like 24, 25 when she came out. That's how old I was. I was 24. So it was kind of the same kind of thing. And he was saying... I was telling him how she can just sustain a note, but you don't know her songs for me to sing them, so I could demonstrate it to you, so that won't work. It's counterproductive
I did a story on her. I did a cover story on her for Rolling
You don't know
Stone.
Any of her songs?
Her. Of course I know her songs.
Your girl knows. Your wife knows the songs.
I mean,
she's that
may
girls.
Or may not be
we know
an
that.
Adele song, but I am an Adele fan. Yeah. I'm not representing properly, but I love Adele. She's.
We all love her, but, you know, girls really love her. We love her a little more than you guys do.
No, of course.
That's what I'm saying. But she sings One Long Breath. It's probably hard to illustrate. It's one long motion.
I was listening to Lovely Day this morning. I was playing it for
my
daughter.
Such a great song. I listen to that song in the morning with my kids when I take them to school.
Right, right.
Yes, it's a song.
Well, I mean, and within there, though, in the chorus, he's got that...
The lovely day.
See,
it goes on forever.
You can hold it.
His is even longer.
Yeah, I'm like, they looped that,
right? Sung, no, not back then.
No?
They didn't have loop capacity. They sung on tapes. It was tapes and slaves. You know what I mean? We're digital.
Tapes and slaves. So that note you think is real?
Absolutely is real. There's nothing fake about that note.
But there's dips in it.
Well, he probably was trying to hold it. That's real.
Wow. What can you do now as a singer that you couldn't do 10 or 20 years ago? How have you grown?
Well, now I know to let the machine echo me.
What does that mean?
In the day, I didn't know how to do that. So when I'm singing the songs, You're Making Me High, I echoed them myself. I didn't know a machine could do that.
What do you mean?
I get so high when I'm around you, baby. I can touch the sky. You make my temperature rise. You're making me high.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
You know the part, right? And I go, baby. I used to do the echoes.
Okay.
I didn't know the machine could do that. So I would sing it live. And then Daryl Simmons said, Tony, you don't have to do the echo. The machine. I'm like, the machine? I didn't know that. I promise you, I didn't know that. So those little things as a new artist is another little cheater's thing, things to do.
You know, some of the stories that you've told about the past, I mean, you were the queen of LaFace.
Yeah, they call me first lady.
Right, the first lady of LaFace, mm-hmm. Right. And I would think, well, then Tony gets whatever she wants. She wants to record that song, she gets that song. She wants to do this, she gets whatever.
Like, I didn't know I had that power. I was begging to get Breathe again, remember?
Right, and I'm like, why would she have to Breathe? Like, I was Tony new. Snapped her fingers, like, give her
That's my first album. I had to prove myself. But after that, there were no songs that I heard that I took from someone.
Right.
Usually they would write the songs for me, or we write the songs together, and I got to sing them.
That first album was huge. Why? Why did it blow up?
I think because it was a unique sounding artist. I remember Elton John, L.A. told me, Elton John said, I love your new artist, Tony. His voice is great. It's androgynous. And L.A. said, I will tell her. He said, by golly, it's her. It's a she. He's like, yes, it's a she. It's a girl.
I never confused you sonically for a guy.
Well, people didn't know. You hear the name Tony Braxton.
Sure.
It's a very masculine name.
Sure.
So
sure.
I think, you know, if you didn't see the artist, you just heard the voice, you may have thought, like, Tevin Campbell had a higher voice.
True. Yeah, Tevin, I think there might have been one record that I was like, well, he sounds like a woman.
See what I mean? But, so he had, like, that androgynous voice. Especially on a song like Let It Flow, or it was very low. Do you remember Let It Flow, how low that song is?
Yeah.
I sung it myself, and I'm like, damn, that was low.
Do you like the sound of your voice?
I had to learn to love it.
When did that happen?
Maybe early 20s.
So when you were a teenager and you're sounding husky, did it make you feel different, less female?
They would tell me her voice is so low. And when I was trying to be a singer, it's like her voice, she's a background singer. Her voice doesn't lend itself to be a lead singer.
Did it make you feel bad?
It made me feel like bad. Yeah, it did make me feel bad. But then there was a part inside of me that would say, I'll show them. You know, I always talk about Mr. and Mrs. I'ma Show Them.
Yeah.
You know Mr. and Mrs. I'ma Show Them?
Tell me.
You don't know Mr. and Mrs. I'ma Show Them?
Tell me.
I'ma Show Them. That's the name. I always think Mr. and Mrs. I'ma Show Them. I say it like it's an
right.
Show Them. No. You have to have, that's the fuel that goes along with it. You know, you have to have that energy boost, that the negative energy makes you go, okay, what are you made of? What are you made of? You're going to let that negative energy stop you, or you're going to proceed and keep it going?
Yeah. No, you have to have that determination.
That's what it does.
To get to that top level, and you have that.
I like to think I do. Sometimes there have been moments in my life that I've lost faith in myself. You know, I was thinking about retiring and all that stuff. I was really going to retire. It was not a fake line.
When?
Right. Oh, my God. Just before Babyface and I did Love, Marriage, and Divorce. I was going to retire. I was set to do it. And I just found out I had lupus. The doctor said she's not going to be able to work. She can't do shows anymore. I canceled my Vegas gig. And I was definitely going to retire.
And why didn't you?
Well, Babyface helped me. Came and said, you cannot retire. First, he came over all cool. Telling Bob, he was working on Barbara Streisand. Barbara Streisand said, you can't retire. Who? Who said I can't retire?
What's she sound like?
Barbara Streisand?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. She...
Give me her voice.
I can't sing like her.
No. Okay.
If I could sing like her, Jesus, God. I mean, she's one of my favorites of the favorites of the favorites of the favorites of the favorites. Barbara. It's just something about her when she sung Yento.
Yeah.
Papa, can you see? Oh, my
so
God.
So there's something in you, though, that nobody becomes a lead by accident.
No, I agree with that.
Something in you is like, I want to be in front.
Yeah.
So what was that? Why?
It was a little bit to show Mr. and Mrs. I'ma Show Them. It was a little bit of the feeling I had inside of myself. It was a little bit of being accepted, being honest. And I just felt that I wanted to fly. I wanted to soar.
I mean, when you're in front, it all rests on your shoulders.
Yeah.
So it's you get the glory, you feel the pressure,
mm-hmm.
right? Everybody else can come and go, but they're all there for you.
Yeah.
And you wanted that. Did you want the pressure?
I wanted all of it. I didn't see it as pressure.
Do you like the pressure?
I think I do. I think I'm addicted to it.
You're addicted to the pressure?
I think I am. I have anxiety before I perform anywhere. That pressure is, I think it lures me to perform. Like, I got to get it off of me. So once I start performing 3 minutes later, it lifts.
Yeah.
Miraculously, it just lifts. And then I'm ready to go. And then all the butterflies asleep.
Do you love the performing or the applause?
All of it.
Well, if you could only get one or the other.
Ooh, the performing. Because I'm going to get the applause if I perform. That's how I really feel. I'm going to get it because I'm going to make my audience, I'm going to drag them on the stage with me. I'm going to make them feel one while performing.
Do you need the applause?
Yes, all of it.
Why do you need the applause?
It's part of the acceptance. That gives me the acceptance. That's my, I don't do drugs, but it's my Percocet, I guess.
Yeah.
Can I say that? I don't know. Is that high? That I have to have it.
I mean, for some people who are so driven to be that, there was some rejection.
Oh yeah,
earlier on.
Yeah, lots of that.
What was that?
Maybe she's not pretty enough. She's not tall enough. I do have height envy. I mean, I have on sweatpants right now.
How tall are you?
I have on high heel shoes. Today? What's today? Wednesdays?
I'm
5'2 on Wednesdays. But the rest of the week, I am 5'1 and 3/4. Not quite 5'2.
And yeah. You have height envy?
I do. All my sisters are giants. Have you seen them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How tall do you want to be?
6 foot.
You want to be?
I would wear high heel shoes.
You want to be in the LA Sparks?
I want long legs like Naomi Campbell. Like that long, gorgeous ballerina legs. Yeah.
As many times as I've seen you on stage, I never thought she's really short.
Because, you know what? I'm oddly shaped, meaning I have long extremities. I mean, my arms are so long I can scratch my knee without bending down. Do you see the cement marks right there? I have really long arms. Usually when I get measured, they measure me 2 or 3 times. Like, that's weird, she's short. And from my hip to my knee, I'm really long. But from my knee to my ankle, oh no, it's stumpy.
So
if I wear a heel, it balances it out. I'm really short. How tall are you?
Like 5'11".
Okay, you're tall. Very, very, very tall to me. You're a giant to me. So you're average height for a male, yeah?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why do you want to be tall?
I don't know. I like how it looks. It looks so cool.
So when you were in the throes of it in the 90s.
Right.
And doing albums and coming up with concepts and going on tour. Did you see yourself in competition with anyone? And I don't, and obviously,
I get it.
Toni Braxton is her own lane.
I know what you mean.
But sometimes it's like, well, we can't do an America tour this year because Whitney is just about, she just did one. Or we can't put an album right now because Aaliyah just put one out. So we got to wait a couple months. What is Brandy doing?
I didn't get that. I got competing with myself to outdo myself. And then I feel like my career was suppressed because my bankruptcy happened after my second album. I mean, seriously, that just put a damper on everything.
Because you didn't want to be out there anymore? Or because you were wrapped up in legal proceedings?
Legal proceedings. And I think it made people look at me different. It made them look at me flawed.
Well, sure.
And I hated that, so I felt like...
You sell all those records, and then you say I'm bankrupt, and people say she must be dumb.
Another dumb black bitch, and excuse my language, and
all she can do
spent
is,
all her money.
Yeah,
and
all
boo,
she can do is sing.
Boo, 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 we don't like her anymore. I mean, she can sing, but we don't really like her because she's stupid.
And did that hurt?
Absolutely. It hurt more than anything.
How did you get through that?
Ooh, family. That's the family and friends. Yeah, it was a tough moment.
Do you think you actually lost fans, or was that just a
absolutely.
Self-perception?
No. Absolutely. No, lost fans. I think the Oprah thing made it worse, because my people told me to do Oprah, and I should not have done Oprah.
Why not?
And I love Oprah. Yeah. It was right after her situation. We actually taped the show in Texas, and she was going through the court ordeal with the beef people.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Oprah is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So you get on Oprah, and you're broke, and she say, well, you know, what did you do? Did you take responsibility? Why did you do that? Or you have Gucci flatwares rumored that you... I mean, she was just asking the questions that the public wanted to hear, to be honest. You have Gucci flatware. You know, she has a sense of humor. I mean, I'm Oprah. I don't even have a Gucci flatware. But she was making it a jokey thing. But that exploded, and it just went everywhere.
So personally, how do you get out of that moment when you're feeling low and
I'm never going to get out. It's going to stay with me forever. That's just part of the...
So you're still upset about that?
I'm not upset about it. I just know it's on me. When people see me, it's the first thing they say. If you Google Tony, it goes bankruptcy, lupus, kid with autism, but the bankruptcy is still the first headline.
I mean, yes.
It's never like, ooh, 13th artist in history this has happened to. Ooh, it happened to TLC. Ooh, it's happened to Toni Braxton, too. No one talks about that. They don't talk about, well, are you going to learn your contracts differently? I get scolded. Are you smarter this time with your contract?
And, people say that to you on the
street. Oh, yeah. I promise they do. I'm like, oh, nonetheless, I was a new artist, and so I've learned a lot. You know, every artist has a terrible contract. I don't care who you are.
Yes, of course.
I don't know anyone, but for whatever reason, I guess I was supposed to be this. Next time, don't sign a bad contract, because they don't know. But then, let me tell you something. They could have me a contract where I made 1 cent, a record, and I would have still signed that contract. Because this is what I wanted to do. And you don't go to a record company and say, I'm not going to sign that contract. Guess what's going to happen? They're not going to sign you. They're going to sign someone else.
Right.
That's what it is. Like a rookie athlete comes in, he might make $200,000 a year. What is he going to say? Well, I'm not going to take that $200,000. That's not what you do. You have to prove yourself.
Right.
But once you prove yourself, it's supposed to, you know, reflect that. But it did eventually, but we had to go to court for it, which I hate it. And L.A. and Kenny, I mean, it was cut up so much. People don't understand it. As BMG, as Eris, as LaFace, as me. TLC's was cut up even more. BMG, Eris, LaFace, Pepitone, then them.
So all these labels are getting a piece before the artist.
It's just cut
theirs.
Up. When you make a deal, like, I'm in business with you. We have a deal together. Then we sign another artist. We're going to give them part of our deal. Then they sign another artist. That artist's going to get part of that deal. It's just how the system is. No one's exempt from that. Just business. That's business. It's not the record business. It's just... business.
Do you not blame Babyface for some of the problems?
Babyface actually helped me in court.
How?
Because the judge, this is a true story. If you watch, if you watch Lifetime, we did a biopic on Break My Heart based on the book. And this is a true story. This happened in court. The judge asked Babyface, so Babyface, if you were offered what happened to Tony, would you take that deal? Because after it was up, my royalty statement was less than $2,000. That's why the bankruptcy happened. And Babyface said, no, I wouldn't take it. And that's what made the judge award me the money.
He said, I would not take the deal that I
based
offered
on
her?
Based on the records that she sold. No, I would not take that deal. She should be paid more than what she's offered.
But before we got to that moment, it was LaFace.
Yeah, but it was also Arista. I was signed to Arista and LaFace.
True.
Yeah.
But... could he not have helped you before we got to court? Should he not have done
they
more for you before?
They kind of tried, but by then it was a big mess.
You mean L.A.
The bigger, L.A. and Kent, yeah. But the bigger companies like, no, but y'all deal's only this much, so you got to pay her out of y'all money. But our deal's only this much. How can we pay her? You haven't even paid us that to pay her.
So you don't...
So they should have gotten a raise, too.
So you don't blame L.A. Reid and Babyface?
No, because I know... only because I know the system. It was no one's fault. It's just how it was cut up.
Well, it's someone's fault. I mean, yeah. Is it Clive Davis?
Well, no, it's just the bigger...
Was he the head of Arista then?
Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe BMG, maybe, should have said, okay, all right, we need to do everybody's deal different.
I mean, Toni Braxton has generated... you know, X amount of money. Yeah. Do you even know how much money you've generated?
During that time, they said it was over $200 million, like $250 million, the first two albums.
The first two albums generated over $250 million for BMG, and you got...
$1,900, less than $2,000 royalty. But I could never talk about it. That's what made it terrible after the bankruptcy. I could never talk about it because I had to sign a gag order. So I had to just sit there and be humiliated while people said crazy things to me all the time. I mean, crazy things. I was just, okay.
So are you saying your career has been has been affected by that. Like the entire Toni Braxton career is.
I think that bankruptcy so early on in my career stifled my career more than a bit.
Now, I mean, we're going deep on this issue. And then the Barry Hankerson stuff happens years later. Mm-hmm. And it does that not fuel the perception? Who here it happens to Toni again? She doesn't pay
attention.
No,
but that wasn't a bankruptcy like people think.
Not a bankruptcy, but just the business is again dragging her
around.
But
the first bankruptcy was Barry Hankerson. I was signed to him then.
Mm-hmm. So is he the big?
No, I wouldn't say he's a very smart, brilliant man. Now, he is brilliant. He's one of those people that's so smart and brilliant. I think he gets in his own way because they're so smart. He is a genius at a lot of things. Yeah.
I didn't even plan to go to this. I don't want to focus on this, but I
appreciate
you. No,
we can talk about it. I'm an open book.
So are you good now?
Cordial.
I meant, how's your money now?
Oh, my money's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a really good check in court.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell anyone. It should have been in Forbes, but I couldn't talk about it.
Can you talk about it now?
Yeah, kind of.
What did you get?
Over 20.
You got 20?
Over.
Over 20.
I won't say an exact amount.
So less than 25?
I won't say.
Okay.
Probably more than that.
Probably more than 25.
Yeah, I got a lot.
To make up for what you actually made on the first two albums.
What I should have made, yeah.
I mean, even still, when you say I generated $250 million and I got $25
but
million.
You have, now, let me break it down to you, because you have to think the record company makes the initial investment. They pay for the record. They pay for every time you see me on television. They pay for every time you see me in an outfit, every piece of jewelry. They pay for all that.
You wouldn't know David Foster. You wouldn't be able to afford Diane
Warren.
They pay
his 5 points or whatever his point structure is. I'm just saying that's a figure of speech. Whether a 5 or 6 point producer, if their fee is $150,000, they paid all of that.
All the studio time.
All of that. So based out of my royalties, I made $1,900, less than $2,000. So they got all their money back. And what was left over for me was $1,900. Do you understand what I mean?
Oh, I do. Because you paid for a lot of stuff that you didn't realize you were paying for.
But you have to pay for it. Who else is going to pay for it? They made the investment. And you want to look like a star. They showed you how to be a star. They made you look like a star. That's expensive. So they made the initial investment.
Did you misspend money?
No, I don't think. Well, I guess I did in the sense because if I only had $1,900, I shouldn't have spent that. But to be fair, they gave me advances. They gave me advances. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, is the Oprah point at all correct?
On what part of it?
The idea. I mean, the Gucci flatware. The notion
the Gucci
of like,
flat was $1,800.
But not that specific item is whatever. You could have gotten that at Marshall's on sale. Who knows? But I'm just saying, like. The notion of, were you spending more than you should have been?
If you read Clive Davis' books, he says Toni Braxton bankruptcy happened because she toured. I spent a lot of money on tour. Not me spending money, but we were taught when you go on tour, you put your money in your tour.
Yeah.
So a lot of my money I spent on my tour.
So you were not making, because touring is where you really should cake up, not the
records.
But
not a new artist. You don't make your money in touring, not if you put it into the tour. I got a little bit of tour support.
Right.
Not a lot, but I got a little bit. And I spent the money that I got, my advancement they gave me, I put it in the tour.
You put your which you saw as investing in yourself?
Yeah. Most artists do that. You're taught. That's what you do. You don't make any money your first tour. Like if you talk to any artist, they're like, oh my God, it's a debt my first tour.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Most artists, their first tour.
I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot of managers who are not thinking about the long-term financial security of the artists.
I don't think people understand how expensive it is to be an artist.
How expensive is it to
Very.
Be an artist?
Millions.
Tell me.
It's expensive.
Because you got to look like an artist?
You got to look like an artist. You have to come up like an artist. You have to floss like an artist.
So there's a truck outside waiting for you, right?
The car is waiting all day.
Right? Your nails are perfect, right?
Your nails, hair done, great shoes. The latest designers.
You are shining today.
Thank you very much.
There's a very expensive necklace.
This is a gift. Yes, it's a gift.
Okay, and a ring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now tell me about this ring on your left hand.
This ring is my engagement ring.
Your engagement ring. And yeah. Who did you get that from?
From Mr. Brian Williams. I call him Brian. You guys have other names for him.
You call him Brian. That's How'd you name. Meet Brian?
Brian and I have been friends for 17 years.
Oh, wow.
A long time. Like, we were really genuinely buddies. We worked together on his song, Baby, You Can Do It. Like, he would come to my baby showers. He would come see me in my plays. One time he got to the play halfway through the play. I'm like, well, why did you get there late? I thought it was going to be an opening act. I'm like, it's a play. It's not a concert. No, I didn't know, T.
See, that right there is part of, I would say, they seem to be from two different universes.
Completely different worlds. I can't even deny that. We are completely different. But we were besties. We were buddies.
How are there other sort of stories you could have that could say, like, you know, yeah, I am from Mars and he's from Venus or whatever?
It's so many stories. I mean, Jesus, I can't even think of it because it's who we are. But
give me
they
one.
Say opposites attract. Oh, I can't even think of anything. Oh, I don't know. I can't think of anything. I just remember he's like, T, I met this chick. Let me call you right back. Let me work this out real quick. Like, we were buddies like that.
Okay. I mean, I guess.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, like, absolutely.
And I was married.
Yeah.
And I never cheated on my husband. I don't do infidelity thing. Each his own, but that's not my thing. But
of course.
He'd call me. Hey, Carrie, can I speak to T real quick? Hey, B, what you doing? Nothing, T, out in these streets trying to get with these hoes. You know how I do it? Like, okay. All right. Well, call me back.
I
like
mean,
we were friends like that.
Is it attractive to see somebody who's like, you know, where he's from and how he acts, which is totally different than you? And
well, things changed for me when I got ill a couple of years ago, 2016. I was on tour and I got really ill. And he said, T, I'm going to come out there with you. And he was every date. He came in his bus. He had two buses with him. And he just followed me to every show. You okay? You good? And I was like, oh, God. And that's how it happened. That's how I started looking at him differently.
Wow. Wow.
That's how it happened.
That's amazing.
But I understand who he is. I know the man. He's such a gentleman. My mom loves him because we've been friends forever.
Uh-huh.
Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am to my mom. And open doors. Fuss at me like, T, why are you doing it? Like, okay, T, guys don't like you when you act like a dude. Stop doing that. Be the girl. Stop being the trick. Like, we were friends like that. You're like, I pay my own dinner. Let a dude pay your dinner. He don't want to pay your dinner.
Mm.
Why are you doing that? Let him be the man. So we were, he was helping me through my dating process when I got divorced with my husband.
It sounds like a movie.
It probably is a movie.
It sounded like one of them Harry Met Sally. Like, we were friends for a long time and then finally was like, you know what? It's you. It's not them. It's you.
Completely different. We have nothing in common, but everything in common.
But it sounds like the key was turned in his heart before it was turned in yours.
Well, he said it was. He didn't tell me, though. He never told me.
Right.
He never told me. I mean, come on. He told me I was a trick.
Right.
Stop being a trick.
Right.
He's like, you bought your husband a Bentley? Why would you buy your husband a Bentley? You the trick, T. Stop buying dudes cars. I'm like, be as my husband.
Right.
That's boo, T. That ain't hot. That ain't hot. Like, we were friends like that. I'm like, what should I get him? I don't get him no Bentley. Like, what should I get him then? It was stuff like that.
You guys are funny.
We were great friends.
So, okay. The song with Birdman is not on the album.
It's not. It was actually a leak.
Right.
Yeah, we were just playing around the studio because he was working with the artist. And I said, oh my God, that track is everything. Let me try something on it.
What is it like being produced by your, fiancé now?
Now fiancé.
Right, not husband yet. When are you getting married?
We haven't decided. He's like, he wanted to get married Valentine's Day. And I'm like, no, it's too soon.
When did he propose?
He proposed the end of last year.
The end of when?
I told him I wouldn't say the exact date. He said, can you leave something mystery?
Some mystery.
Can we have something for us? Can we leave something for us?
Can you say where it was?
It was in Vegas.
Where?
It was at my favorite restaurant and in the Encore. The Sinatra restaurant.
Did he get down on one knee?
No, he didn't do it on one knee.
No?
No, he's not a one knee type of guy. That's not fake. What he ain't. He's not that guy.
So what was it like?
I didn't know he was going to ask me. He was, let's go to Vegas and hang out. I'm like, okay, I'll go. And we went to a restaurant. It was me, him, and his assistant and his brother. So why would I think he's going to ask me?
He did it right in front of his brother?
His brother was there. They knew, but they didn't tell me.
So are you're sitting at the table?
We had two tables. We had a different table. When we first got there, because we were late, he was late, running late. So we had the table. He says, this is not the table. okay, so he made his move. We waited a little bit, then he moved to this table in front of the fireplace, and then we ate. And then he kept getting up to go to the bathroom. I'm like, gosh, why you got to tinkle so many times? I didn't get it. Then he just grabbed me by my hand and asked me.
And what did he say?
He calls me Michelle. Does not call me Tony.
What?
My middle name is Michelle.
Okay.
He calls me Michelle. Michelle, I got to talk to you. Just grab my hand and said, Tony, Michelle Braxton, will you marry me? I'm giving you the quick gist of it. I'm not giving you all the details, but.
Yeah, I know. You want to keep something
for yourself.
He grabbed
my hand, and he was all romantic about it. And when I got to the room, he had all these flowers in there. And he knows I love Vegas.
Yeah.
So we did it in Vegas. And then he said, okay, let's do the drive-thru. Let's go get married in the drive-thru. No.
No, no.
We're not going to do the drive-thru, babe.
So when he said, will you marry me?
I was in shock.
What'd you say?
Nothing at first. I didn't say anything at first. I just kind of looked around the room. It's like,
where's Ashton Kutcher?
And then, right, exactly. And then I remember the waitress standing like this, because she must have known. So she was like this. Her hands were underneath her chin, like she was waiting. Like,
yeah. So then you knew it was real. But when did you say yes?
I don't remember. It's kind of surreal, but I definitely say yes.
Well, of course, you have this ring. But yes, no, I remember yes. Proposing to my wife.
How was that?
We were in Paris, and I took her to this restaurant, and I was super nervous, and I like drank a bottle of wine before she got there, and the whole dinner, I didn't want it to just be like we had a normal dinner, and then I popped this ring on her. So I'm trying to be like, you know, you're so beautiful, and I'm so happy to be with you, and she's like, you're drunk, shut up.
Right.
And so finally yeah. We went out on the terrace, and I got down on one knee, and she did not say yes for like 60 seconds.
Yeah, it probably was only 10 seconds, but to you it felt like 60.
What?
That's
what?
How I was.
And I'm like, you have to say yes or no. And then finally she was like, yes, yes. But
it was probably a surreal moment for her.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you as the guy are in control of that moment. Yeah. You know it's happening. You know, you work up to it. She's like, shocked.
Yeah, I was definitely shocked. And he's never been married before.
And you've been married how many times?
Just once.
Okay.
I would be proud if I was Elizabeth Taylor, though, but I've only been married once. He's never been married. He has two kids, same baby mama. So
where do you
said he was
going to
be a bachelor. He said he thought he would never get married.
Where do you want to get married?
L.A., probably. My family's there.
Destination. Take him to go to Hawaii. Or...
We travel and I work so much.
Mm.
You know, I kind of want to be home.
It'd be nice to just be home, take it easy.
Like honeymoon, I'd rather be home.
Staycation.
Exactly. I don't really want to go anywhere.
But do you like touring?
I do love touring. It can be grueling because it's physical.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people go out on their first tour and they're like, no, that was not for me. I like the fame, but I don't like that.
I like that part because the adrenaline is the performance, the live performance.
But the traveling.
That's the grueling part.
The moving. You're not... You know, and you could be away for 6 months, nine months if you're killing it. Like, it's hard.
That's true. I can bring my kids with me, though they're old enough now. Rather, they're in school, but my family comes out. Like, I go on tour. I go on tour in June.
Okay.
No, May 23rd, I go on tour. So it's me, my sister Tamar, and my sister Tracy. So my sister Tracy opens it. My sister Tamar's in the middle, and it's me. So
an American tour?
American tour. Then we go out in September abroad.
To where in September?
Everywhere.
First, Europe?
A world tour. First is here in the States
for
Sex and Cigarettes, and then I go on the world tour in September.
So, yeah, but you start in Europe?
I start in Europe, probably London.
Mm-hmm. Do you go to Asia?
Mm-hmm.
In
mm-hmm.
South America?
Mm-hmm.
Australia?
Oh, yeah.
That's a long tour.
Yeah, I've been there before. I've done the Asian Pacific in about 21 days, 4 weeks maybe.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of fun, though.
It's a lot of fun.
That part's a lot of fun.
But you don't get to see these countries, do you?
I kind of do.
You do?
I kind of do.
You make the time to...
I make the time to like have the limo driver drive me around. But my favorite place to go is Russia.
Why?
I love it there. I just feel at home.
In Moscow?
St. Petersburg, Moscow. I love it there.
You feel at home
I don't know
in
what it
Russia?
Is.
How's that?
I don't know. Every time I go every other year. And it's what I love.
Really?
Especially when it's real snowy, which is often, but... St. Petersburg is probably my favorite city.
Especially now. I'm like, yeah.
No, now is not the best.
Russia.
Yeah, but.
Weird.
I go there and I'm received like Michael Jackson. No, honestly.
Yeah. I have no doubt.
I love it there.
How many records have you sold, whole career?
100, I don't know, 67 million maybe?
67 million.
Yeah, it's about 67
Can
million.
Can you walk down the street?
In the States?
Yeah.
Of course no one knows I'm this short. First of all, I'm good. So most of the time I'll get, anyone ever tell you look just like Toni Braxton?
You get that a lot.
A lot. And I'll say, have you ever heard that? And I'm like, all my life. And I just keep it going.
And you don't tell them, I am Toni Braxton.
Sometimes they go, oh my God, it's you. But most of the time they say, anyone ever tell you look, they don't think it's me because I'm shorter than they think. And I don't know what else it is.
And you don't know what else it is.
Sometimes they know it's me, like you're Toni Braxton, I'm a fan, but usually they're not sure.
When you're...
And I'm not big when I go out.
What do you mean?
I'm not trying to look like Toni. If I'm trying to go out, I'm going to wear a hat, I'm going to wear frumpy, I'm going to wear high heels though, but I don't go out big. Only when I'm working.
Always the heels, because...
The heels might be a giveaway, because I'm a heel girl.
Because why? Because you're short? Because
yeah, you're
fashion? Because you're...
I'm short, and I'm going to always want to appear taller, and it makes me feel better. But I'm not going to come in furred up like I came in here, because I'm working.
Professional.
Yeah.
Why? Do you write?
Oh, yeah. You'd be surprised. Like, how could an angel break my heart? You're making
me
high.
I read through the credits for the new album, and your name is listed first on all the songs.
Oh, yeah. This album, I wrote most of the songs.
So does that mean Toni Braxton is sitting at home writing songs, or does that mean you're in the studio saying, let's do it like this?
All of it. Sometimes I come at home, I come up with melodies, and I go and I sing it and put them down. Sometimes I hear a producer, he'll give me a track. Oh, my God, I love that track. Let me go home and let me write to it. Let me go sing it. None of the producers were really there in the studio when I sung. Kenny was like, it's time for you to start producing. Like, really, what are you doing? I've taught you well. So the songs we wrote together, like FOH, have you heard FOH?
Yeah.
Me, him, and Daryl wrote it and said, okay, I'm out, going out to dinner. See ya.
So, again, what did he teach you about producing to where he does not need to be there? You know what to do.
Well, first, I'm a singer. I'm a vocalist.
Right.
So I make my own choices when I'm performing live anyway. So I know how to do vocal production. I could do vocal production on anyone. But the musical production is what he says, time for you to start doing that.
So, okay, I want to be a singer. Okay. Or better yet, let's say here's a young woman who wants to be a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And she's good.
Mm-hmm.
But she needs tutelage.
I could help her.
You're the teacher.
Absolutely, no doubt.
What are we teaching her?
I need to hear her first. I need to hear her tone. I need to hear her range.
Let's say she sounds like young Toni, 22-year-old Toni Braxton.
Ooh, then I would let her just be her, sing. And I would refine some things that I would think that she would need to. Just being a young artist, she may not have the best mic technique.
So what would you teach her about the mic?
If she don't sing too close to the mic, if you're doing a long note, if you're doing something tender and intimate, stay close. If you're going to do P's. Don't go P. Can you please come over? Say, can you please come over?
You move your head away from the mic for a P.
Because you don't want to say please. You want to say please.
Is it the same with T's?
You can. T's, you want to say T or T. It depends.
So you're moving your mouth to the mic so that you don't get a hard...
Right. You don't want that. No, but. You don't want a but.
Right.
Right. You don't want to say too much chew.
Okay.
You want to, some things are use. Some things are choose.
What else would you teach her?
When she's singing a long note, sustain the end for me. Give me some vibrato on the end. Don't just say, give me that vibrato at the end.
Why?
Because it sustains differently. It sustains better. It'll sound monotone if you don't.
What else?
Just depends. I would hope to have a musician singer because they'll really get it.
Mm. What would you teach her about the stage?
Don't do too much movement at first. Let the people hear the song and then move.
At the beginning of the song or the beginning of the show?
Beginning of a song, depending on the show too. So if you're singing a slow song and you move immediately, the audience didn't have a chance to engage with you.
So at the beginning?
Stand there a second, sing the song, let them feel it, and then move. You can go left or right. I would say move straight. Like, Whitney was very good at that.
Was very good at?
If I should stay. She just stood there on that song. She knew to be regal and sing that song. And I will always. Then she did a hand. Love you. She knew how to do that. Then she gave you this. Michael Jackson was great at that.
Big arms.
Arms. And then she might walk. I hope. Life treats you kind. So she might walk towards the audience. And then she's going to walk a little bit and then stand still and sing it. That's important. Not to move too much in singing.
There's an extra challenge for you ladies who are up there in high heels. You can't do so much dancing.
We were born in high heel shoes, most girls.
Of course. Yeah. No, I mean, you can rock the shoe, but you can't do some of the dancing that people who are...
Well, I'm not a dancer.
Right.
I'm a singer.
Okay.
So dancing for me, I might give you a little one, two, but I'm not going to dance like that.
Yeah.
Little things, but... If I'm watching Janet and she's dancing, she may have on a high heel sneaker because she's short like me too.
I definitely feel that Janet does not get enough credit as sort of the godmother of a lot of the women who
Janet
came after her.
Janet is the poopies. My kids can't say the S word yet. I told them when they're 17 they can say the S word. Okay, but I have to say poopies. But one of her songs, I have song envy. Let's Wait a While with Song Envy. And I wasn't known that I wasn't out yet. I wasn't signed yet. But Let's Wait a While. If I could do any song, it would be that song.
Let's Wait a While. Why
my
that
favorite
one?
Song by Janet. I don't know. It's just how she sung it. There's something I want to tell you. Oh, my God. Everything. How she sung that. It was this innocence. And what, I don't had her choice of delivery to perform that song. And that was great.
It was really important, that song, when it came out. Because it was real. It was personal. It was, I am a young woman. I am not ready for all that.
Yes.
Let's chill. It wasn't just some song that was too an abstract, I love you. But yes. Like, we've seen you as Penny. We've seen you on the side of Michael.
She grew up with us.
Yes.
Yes.
But I'm not all the way grown yet. I want control from mom and dad, but you, boy, slow down.
You can't have this. Yeah, slow it down. That was my favorite song by her.
What else do you, what other songs do you envy?
I think all artists, you should ask artists this. They all have song envy. A song you wish that you had sung. Everybody has that. Like, oh my God, I wish that was my song.
Like what?
Because there are more. There's a troth of them. Although Moth to a Flame is kind of up there.
Mm.
Justin Timberlake sung it on something when he was in NSYNC. He rocked it. He probably had song envy for that song. Gosh, what song? Oh, it was a Beyonce song. To the left, to the left. Love that song. Wish I had that song.
Irreplaceable.
Yeah, Irreplaceable.
I love that song.
Yeah. Didn't Babyface co-write that? And I said to him, like, how did you get... What about me? Yeah. I did.
I mean, you probably have a lot of Beyonce song envy because she's got a million
I don't have
hits.
A lot of Beyonce envy because she doesn't
just
sing.
A song envy, not personal.
No, I mean Beyonce song envy because she sings a lot of dance songs that are known. So I'm not really the dance girl.
You're AC, not well, the dance girl.
Yeah, there are some songs I hear and I love them, but I don't wish I sung them. But that's the song I mentioned was one. Let's see, who else do I like? Give me something. I can tell you if I had...
Surely... there must be some Anita Baker.
Oh, yeah. No, but nothing that I envy. Nothing that I envy on that. I do have work that... I wish I had that one from Rihanna.
Jody Watley.
Rihanna. Oh, Jody Watley. What song would that be? Want Me, maybe?
Mm-hmm. She was a deeper voiced lady.
Maybe. No, not really.
No?
She came from Shalimar.
Right?
No.
No?
Think about the song, The Second Time Around. It was a little higher.
That I can hear. That is definitely higher.
Yeah.
You must have Prince song envy.
Oh, Until the End of Time.
Mm.
Everybody has Adore. Prince envy. Adore. Oh, my God. Yeah, it was up there. Yeah, everyone has song envy.
You know, it's funny. Singers will talk about song envy. We'll talk about influences. Rappers will not.
Oh, no, you can't do
There's
that.
There's no rapper who influenced me.
Yeah.
I have no song envy. I don't care about the rest of them. I just do me.
That's hardcore. You can't ever bow down to anyone else.
Can you just have an influence? Like, to the previous generation? Like, no.
I would think they could, but they can't do it. Girls sometimes do it, and they get a little beef about it sometimes, but it would be nice if they did, just gave it up to each other.
They might shout out Pac, but beyond that...
Or Biggie.
Maybe.
They get it to the C-suite.
Big can get some too.
Well, that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite Biggie song is Bones and Biggie.
Yeah.
You remember song, baby? You would too if you knew what this game would do to you. Been through this since 92. Look at all the BS I've been through. Oh, that's my favorite one. Yes.
So you could rhyme.
I think I can, but everyone's like, no, you can't.
What does your fiance say? Does he think you could rap?
He just lets me. I just entertain him. He just looks at me like, okay, T. So that's me do me. I actually do a rap on my shows. I do Biggie when I go on tour.
What do you do?
Is this, I got, because you asked me, I can't remember. I forgot. To all the ladies in the place with styling grace, allow me to lace these lyrical dishes from my bushes. Who rocks grooves and make moves at all the mommies? That's the one I do a lot.
Yeah. Oh, God, he was the best.
But I'm going to do Drake this tour.
What are you going to do?
Passion fruit.
How are you going to do it? Tell me.
That's the singing. That's not really rapping.
Right.
I'm just going to sing it.
Yeah.
Passion is from miles away. Passion with the things you say. Passionate from my own way. I can't blame you. I love this song.
Singers will so often cover something that is within the demographic. A black woman do a black woman song. And I find it so much more interesting when people go outside the demographic. Like TLC to do the Prince song.
Yeah.
Because you can bring something new and different and fresh to it.
That's true. I would do Alanis Morissette. Everyone picks Alanis Morissette because, I mean, it's Alanis Morissette.
She has great written songs.
Great songs. I have to be careful, though, because if I go too far left, you're like, okay, what is she doing?
I mean, I could see some of the Tony audience being like, who that is?
Because when I rap, they go, for real, sometimes I do Little Kim. They're like, for real? But they know I love Little Kim.
Wait, what Little Kim?
Everything, anything from Little Kim. I mean, I'm a Kimmy fan.
Like what?
Well, my favorite, it's not just her and Mary. If I told you once, I told you twice, you be throw the booty like a groupie. You know that song? Who you loving? Who you want to be hugging? Sitting on your Ninja Honda with Teresa and Rhonda. What? That's everything. It's Kimmy. Anything about Kimmy.
So wait, what's your favorite Birdman rhyme?
Besides our song?
Yeah.
Let me think. Oh, you had it in my head. Oh, why did you ask me? What's your favorite?
Oh, my God.
It's a lot.
You know, I mean, Like Father, Like Son.
Oh, yeah.
Just exploded my head.
Yeah, that was kind of brilliant.
There's a joint, I cannot remember the name.
Don't you hate
when
that happened?
It was a mixtape joint, and it was a lower vibe.
He was rapping?
Yes, and it was slower, and it was a little brighter. And I played that song like 100 times.
So you
got
to tell me so I can learn it today and call him and sing it to me.
But nobody would remember because
it was a mixtape.
It was a mixtape choice. Right, so you had to be like a real, real fan
behind it.
So wait, do you have a Wheezy rhyme?
Everywhere I turn around, everybody bling bling. I mean, it's everything. I mean, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's anything.
So is being Birdman part of your literal family, does Wayne become part of your extended family as well?
Yes, he will be.
How is he doing?
I haven't seen him in a while because I haven't been down to Miami.
Okay.
But last I heard, he was good.
Okay. I mean, I'm a huge fan.
Of the Wayne?
Oh, my God.
Everybody is.
Oh, my God. But there was like a 4-year period when it was just everything was fine. Right before he went to jail, it was like 4 albums and 4 mixtapes.
How to Love was the song. Oh, how to Love. Somebody could understand. That was my joint. Yes.
So, do you have an understanding of why you became a superstar?
Talent and opportunity met together at the moment that it was supposed to meet. But I always knew I was going to work with Babyface. I used to tell everybody, I'm going to work with Babyface. He's going to produce my songs and he's going to make me famous. People from my neighborhood will tell you, like, she's been saying that for years.
Since you were helping.
When he was in the deal. I was in college.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I knew it. I saw it.
Why?
I think it's important to dream. You got to dream your future. You got to dream it to happen. Materialize.
Do you pray for success and fame, or that's not to be prayed for?
I pray for favor.
What does that mean?
Favor of the people.
Okay.
I pray for favor.
That you are understood, accepted, and
loved?
That the
people, yeah. That the people understand my vision and acknowledge it and love it. Like, some people have favor of the people. Like, Oprah has favor of the people.
Oh, my God.
LeBron has favor of the people.
Oh, my God.
There's that thing about them that the people love.
And Whitney had that.
Oh, yeah.
Drake has that.
He definitely has that.
I mean, is it charisma or is it more than charisma?
This is both. Because I remember at first he didn't talk. It probably wasn't best for him to talk because he was still Aubrey. What was his name when he was in the kid acting? So he still had that with him. I remember that. He would hear his rap and be like, oh my God. Then he would talk. And he'd be like, don't talk. Just listen. So, it's Jodeci. Don't talk. Just listen. And then then he grew up because he was still a kid. You know what I mean? He was still holding that Disney thing. I don't know if it was a Disney show, but that Aubrey kid thing was still there. And then once he became a man and became a man, talk like a man, then it was like, whoa, just talk. Right. Just talk.
So do you think you have favor of the people like the Oprah, the LeBron?
I think I have had definite moments like that. I think in the beginning of my career, I definitely was blessed with that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your superpower?
Probably my sense of humor. People don't expect that.
I mean, you're way funnier than I.
People never expect that. I have a sense of humor. I like to laugh a lot. I'm silly.
But that doesn't really come out in the career.
No, it doesn't.
What is the superpower that has...
But the people behind the career know that.
Yes. And thus, they like working for you because they like
being
around you.
She's funny. She's silly. She's a regular girl.
I mean, before you talked about determination, but I wonder if there's some other superpower that has made all this happen for you.
I think my secret power is that when I sing live, it's it. It's done. It's over. It's a wrap.
When did you first see that? That you sang outside the house for strangers, and they were like, holy.
I didn't get it till I became famous in the business and I performed. I'm comfortable singing behind anybody.
Right.
I don't care who it is. It could be the late, great Whitney Houston.
Right.
And her song, I'll Always Love You, would probably kick my ass, but I don't care. I am never uncomfortable singing behind a person. Like, people are like, I need to sing before them. Oh my God, they'll kill me. I don't care.
Oh, you mean I'm on the bill after Whitney Houston?
No, like when you do award shows and people sing before you and after you. There's some people you don't want to sing after because they're going to kill it.
Oh, you're not afraid of singing after anybody?
No, I'm not. I don't care who it is.
Because I'm Toni Braxton. I got the voice.
Exactly. I don't care how big their song is. I'm never uncomfortable singing after someone.
That is a self-confidence.
This is self-confidence.
An arrogance.
Not arrogance.
An appropriate arrogance.
It's a confidence that I have because sometimes you do a show and you do award shows, you might have to sing after the person had the big song.
Yeah.
Okay, I can do it.
Where did that confidence come from?
My mom always says, nothing greater than you but God. And all you can do is your best. And you can't try to do someone else's best. You have to do yours.
I love Toni's steely self-confidence. I love her mom. I love that through all the madness, she's persevered and triumphed. Thanks to Toni for your time. Thanks to you for listening. You can make your dreams a reality, and I hope this show can help. I'm on Twitter at Toure and on Instagram at Toure Show. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review, and talk about it on social. Toure Show is written by me, Toure, and produced by Chris Colbert and Matt Ford, with help from Chris Basil and Shelby Royston and William Jolly and Chuck Marcus and Cadence 13 Studios. We're beaming to you from Brooklyn, baddest place in the world, and we're back next Wednesday with more knowledge from amazing folks because the man can't shut us down.